You are listening to The Point from MC3 in Lewistown, Pennsylvania. Check us out on the web at mc3church.org or find us on Facebook at mc3church. MC3, it's like nothing you'd expect.
So I am a coupon kind of guy. I didn't used to be, but I'm now so coupon that my kids hate doing anything with me. I know that sounds really, really bad. But we're like, hey, let's go out to eat tonight. And it's always like, oh, no. Because, like, I have a coupon. And it's gotten to that point, like, you know, honestly, we don't go anywhere if we don't have a coupon for it. And even just last week or 2 weeks ago, I was, Kendra was like, oh, I've got this thing. I'm working on a paper or to write or something, and we knew dinner was going to be rough. I was working a little bit late, and I said, hey, I know. Why don't we get Arby's? Because I had this Arby's coupon that if I joined their rewards program, which, by the way, I have every rewards program. I'm part of all of them. So if I join the rewards program, I get 50% off my order. I'm like, that's pretty good. Like, and again, I've shared this before, and of course now we've got older kids. Two of them are in college, so there's only four at home. But like, things that are cheap sound great until you multiply them times six. Like that's the deal. People are like, oh, this is a really good deal. Like, yeah, it is if it's you and your friend. But when you multiply it by six, it gets really expensive. So anyway, all that to say, 50% off is a big deal to go out to fast food. Like, our kids don't even, we don't even go that much. And so we're all getting ready, and I went to download the app, and there were all these problems. I couldn't get the app to load on my phone and all this stuff. I was like, that's it, guys. I'm sorry. Arby's is not going to work. And so we were like, well, what are we going to do? It's like, well, I have a coupon. And so I had a different coupon, and this was for Jersey Mike's. And this one was for, I think it was like 20% off your order for the end of the month. And I'm like, sweet, there we go. And so we did Jersey Mike's for the four of us, and we ended up paying for one sub because I also had the reward points from the Jersey Shore, you know, rewards program. So it all came together. We bought one sub. We paid for one sub, got four, and it was pretty good there. Hey, there's like a hum. Do you hear a hum? I think it's that monitor, maybe. Maybe not. I don't know. I mean, it's just my ears. I'm also old and going in bad ways that way. So anyway, coupons are like, we're always the thing. And here I've got, yeah, that definitely was the monitor. So I've got some coupons here. I don't normally get the newspaper, so I had Justin, he's out there, track down some coupons for me because they get it for his office. And so I've got some coupons here. And the thing about coupons is that, you know, they have this thing on the back of them, at the very bottom or at the top there, that starts with EX. And what is that? The expiration date. Exactly. And, of course, after the expiration date, you can't use a coupon. It's done. And that's why, honestly, there are a lot of sick people. There are probably more people watching online right now that are in this building. One of them is my son, Jack, who is at home. He's supposed to be leading worship today. Is at home because he's really not in feeling well at all. But I've been trying to pawn off. I've got McDonald's points expiring at the end of February. And McDonald's really isn't my favorite thing. But they also have a 20% off coupon. You can't beat that. But anyway, I've got these points expiring, and I want them to be used. And it's worth, like, it's like 2,500 points. Dude, do you realize that can get you, like, an egg sandwich? So use my points. Anyway, because I don't want to waste them. But the idea of coupons, but at the end of this month, those points expire. And so they're not valuable anymore. They don't matter anymore. And again, we've got coupons here. We got some for Icy Hot. And this is for 2 weeks only. It expires. It's $2 off. Expires on February 10th. And then here I've got some Boost Energy Drink. It expires on March 24th, so we're still good on that one. And then this one, what is that? Dawn Power Wash, and get one for free, except for the travel size. So you can't take your dish soap to go, because I know you're all like, hey, I know what I want to do on vacation. I'd like to take my soap and wash dishes when I'm on vacation. But anyway, you know, maybe that's your deal, and so that's your thing. You're like, hey, this is fun. But anyway, this doesn't expire yet, so it's still good. What have we got here? We've got a buy one, get one free mayonnaise. This coupon doesn't expire, it doesn't expire until March 9th. Mayonnaise, by the way, does expire. And if you're not sure about that, talk to anyone that was on the missions team in, where's Chris? What year was that? Was that 2016? 17. We were in Oaxaca, and I don't tell you the whole story, but the guy with us was like, he had mayonnaise, and he left it on his shelf in Oaxaca, like out by the windowsill, and he left it there for 2 days, and he decided to make a sandwich with it later. He's like, I'm sure it'll be fine. It wasn't. What do we got one here? For Listerine. He probably could have used that after what happened to him. This one is expired. So it expires on February. Man, my dates are messed up. February 6th. So this is expired. So even though it's saving a whole dollar off, it is now worthless, right? There's nothing that you can do that. And I should also say, you know, before it expired, it has, what is it, 1/100th of a cent of value. And I actually looked this up at one point and to see, like, okay, could you cash all these in and make, like, 10 bucks with, like, 3,000 coupons? And I don't think you can actually do that. But anyway, so this is expired. And so with an expired coupon, you're like, it is not valuable anymore. The time has passed. I haven't used it. It hasn't come through. So I'm gonna get rid of it. I'm going to throw it out. And so coupons, you know, there's some things about them. They promise a discount or something. They promise something. Maybe it's a discount. Maybe it's a free item. They have an expiration date. So there's a point where after that, they don't work anymore. They don't come through for you. And third, if they're not used by that expiration date, we throw them out. Or at least you should. If you're saving expired coupons, that's just weird. I'm sorry. That's just weird. So throw them out. But all those things that they've promised something, they've got a time that they have to use them. And if you don't use them by the time, you throw them out. And sometimes we think about God's promises the same way. We have this timeline. God promises something. There's something there, and it's usually more than a dollar off. God promises something, and then we have in our mind, okay, this is when it needs to happen. This is when God needs to come through. And if God doesn't come through, according to our time, we basically throw it away. We throw away God's promise. We throw away our opinion about that promise. We throw away our opinion about God because He didn't come through, at least according to our expiration date. But I want you to understand that God's promises don't expire until they're completed. So there are no expiration dates on God's promises until He actually completes it, until He comes through. And so the point this week is this, that God's promises aren't finished until they're fulfilled. God's promises aren't finished until they're fulfilled. He is faithful. He will come through. And if He hasn't come through, one, you might have missed what the promise was, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. But if He hasn't come through, it's because His time isn't right. It's not because He's given up. It's not because He's unable to fulfill that promise. It's not because He's like, you know what? Sorry, you don't count. If it hasn't happened, it's because it's not time yet. God doesn't throw away any promise. So understand that, because again, we're like, oh, this is what I expected, or God promised this, and this is what I was hoping, and it didn't come through according to my timeline, and we're like, ah, forget it, God. But if it didn't happen, it doesn't mean it's done, because God's promises aren't finished until they're fulfilled. And so it is with a bit of sadness that I teach this morning, because we are at the end of the life of Jacob. And this is going to sound really weird, but I kind of wept a little bit when I was preparing to study as we get to the part where Jacob dies. It's like, man, we've gone on this incredible journey over these last 2 months. And so we are here on the life of Jacob, wrapping it up. And there's some things that are going to happen this morning, okay? We're going to be covering some more content than we perhaps have covered in the past few weeks in terms of the life of Jacob, and you'll understand why. And I'm going to give you some little, so you're going to have to use your brains a little bit more, engage a little bit more, but we're going to do a little bit of backstory and then to the point, and then a little bit more backstory and then come back to the point, and then some more backstory and then come back to the point. I don't know how many times we do that. But the idea is, because I want to kind of catch you up on this, because we're going to see today in the life of Jacob that God made some promises to Jacob. And God, well, in Jacob's lifetime, didn't come through. But that wasn't because God was done. Because we can always count on God. We can always trust Him. We can always count on His promises. And if a promise hasn't happened, if you're like, why didn't this happen in my life? It's not because you were ignored. It's not because God didn't come through or because He couldn't come through. It's because it's not time yet. Because God is never going to fail. So we're going to turn on the house lights here. Hey. And we're going to be looking at, don't even try to follow me right here, because we're going to be in Genesis 34. But let me start with backstory number one. And this is on the screen. And if you care enough, that sounds really bad. If you're interested in learning more about these stories, you can take a picture of that, because I'm going to do a lot of summarizing everywhere it says backstory. And so the first thing we're going to see in Backstory 1 is right after we finished last week. And last week we were talking about... What were we talking about last week? God can change anyone's heart. He changed Esau's heart. There we go. See? Good for you. You all did well. All right, yeah, God can change any heart. And we saw how God changed Esau's heart, and he welcomed him back after 20 years of this, and of course wanted to kill him. And so the very next chapter, we're not talking about it much, but one of the children of Leah was Dinah. And the short version of this story is that Dinah was raped by a guy named Shechem. And Shechem raped her and then decided, you know what, I love her. So I want to marry her because I want her to be mine. And so Shechem basically goes to Jacob, who didn't do a very good job fathering. And he didn't do a very good job fathering going through the whole story. Goes to Jacob and says, okay, what can we do? And Jacob doesn't really answer. And basically Simeon and Levi, who are Dinah's actual physical brothers, they're not half-brothers or anything, they're the same mom, said, hey, here's what you guys can do. If you really care about our sister and you really want to marry her, why don't you guys all get circumcised? Because circumcision is a sign of following God, and we're all circumcised. And so if you want to be a part of our family, and we talked about this a few weeks ago, too, about how cultures required you to adopt their religious, their idols or their religious other things. And so he said, hey, get circumcised, and then she can totally marry us. And marry into the family, or Shechem can totally marry her. And so the whole village was like, yeah, that's a great idea. Shechem is the prince of the city, and he really wants to marry her. So we're all going to get circumcised. So all the men were circumcised. And if you're not sure what that is, go home and ask your mom. Or if you're at home right now, you can ask someone around you. And if you're really young, happen to be watching online, and it's a really awkward conversation, set you up. Anyway, but so here's the deal. They were like, yeah, we're all going to get circumcised. And then Simeon and Levi, and this was so wrong, but man, so crazy. While they were still healing, so within a couple days, and again, if you know what circumcision is, it's not very comfortable, and the men, who are the fighters, were not in a spot where they could fight, and so Simeon and Levi went through and killed all of them. Killed the entire village of men of Shechem. And so they were getting back for what he had done to Dinah, to their sister. It was not honoring to God, and Jacob even was like, man, you've caused problems for Neo. Everyone's going to be mad at us. But anyway, that was something that happened. That was a side story. But again, like, it's not a good story, but kind of crazy. Like, hey, get circumcised, and then while you're down, I'm going to take you out. So that's what happened there. Then the second thing we see in this backstory is departure to Bethel, and going on into chapter 35, and we're going to be in 35 a little bit, so if you want to get YouVersion out in a little bit here. But basically, God comes to Jacob and says, look, I want you to go back to Bethel. Bethel is where Jacob had the dream of the Jacob ladder or the stairway to heaven, and we missed an incredible opportunity for the band to do a cover song. But it was the stairway to heaven that where he encountered God, and God said, look, I'm going to make a promise to you. And so God says, I want you to go back to that place, which is basically 20 years later. And so they go back, and Jacob has everyone remove their idols. They had some idol worship going on. The whole family cleansed and purified themselves and said, we are now going to be following God on their way back to Bethel. So that's a little bit of the backstory. Now let's get into the point. The first thing we're going to talk about is that when it comes to God's promises, they are unfinished. If they haven't come through, not expired. It doesn't mean God won't come through. It just means he hasn't yet. And that's a very important distinction. And we're going to be, for this first part, we're going to be in Genesis chapter 35. And we're going to see here that God reminds Jacob of his promises. God reminds Jacob. And so there's a couple things that are happening here. First of all, it says in verse 9, it says, after Jacob had returned from Padan Aram, which is where they left, God appeared to him again and blessed him. God said to him, by the way, this is the third major conversation that God has with Jacob, at least as it's recorded, and we'll see what the other two here in a second. There were some other moments where God appears and says, do this or go there, but this was an actual full-on recorded conversation. So Jacob returned from Padan Aram, God appeared to him again and blessed him. God said to him, your name is Jacob. But you will no longer be called Jacob. Your name will be Israel. And this is God coming back to Jacob and saying, remember a few months ago when I changed your name? Remember that conversation we had? Because I'm not done. I promised you that instead of being the deceiver, your name is now going to be fights with God or God fights for you. It's a play on the Hebrew word there. He said, I'm not done. So I just want you to remember, Jacob, that when I changed your name, and it's interesting, when I changed your name, you're not Jacob anymore. Your name is now Israel. And what's interesting is up until this part of the story, even though God changed his name, it still talked about him being Jacob. And now, as the story continues, you see the name Israel kind of getting dumped in there in place of Jacob. So Jacob and Israel are the same person. And he says that your name is no longer Jacob, your name's going to be Israel. And so he named him Israel. This is just, again, a reminder of the promise that God made. Because Jacob was like, oh yeah, that was cool, you changed my name, whatever. But God's like, no, not a whatever. Because I'm not done yet. Because I promised you that you're not going to be the deceiver anymore. You're going to be the one for whom God fights. That is struggling with God, and God is going to struggle for you. And so, just as a quick pause here, I want to clarify something, especially if you're new to your faith or new to reading the Bible, because this is a little confusing. So Jacob has his name changed to Israel. But as you read through from this point forward, basically, the rest of the Old Testament, even into the New Testament, you're going to see that Israel is a person. So for the next few chapters, you're going to see that Israel is a person because his name was Jacob. But you're also going to see that Israel is going to become a nation. It's a people. So Israel is a person. Israel is also a people, and getting ahead of ourselves a little bit, but there, when you see Israel, for the most part, when you're reading about it in the Old Testament, in the New Testament, it's referring to the nation of Israel, this people that all descended from Jacob. And then finally, Israel is also a place. Because the land of Israel is also called the Promised Land or the land of Canaan. And the reason it's called the Promised Land is because God promised this land to Abraham. I'm not going to go there yet. It might have continued. So just so you know, when you read, you have to kind of look at context to go, okay, are we talking about Jacob, the person? Or are we talking about Israel, the nation? Or are we talking about Israel, the land, the physical land, its properties were, you know, the Mediterranean was on the, which side is that? That would be the west, and the Jordan River is on the east, and pretty much that land in the middle, that was the land of Israel. So just to kind of give you that context, because sometimes if you're reading, if you think that you're talking about a person and it says that, you know, that there was a lot of fruit coming out of the land, you're like, that's weird, out of Israel. So just that's a time out just to tell you that. So God reminds Jacob about his name change. He said, that promise I'm not done with. And then, remember, this was the third major appearance. So God reminds Jacob of the second major appearance. And then it goes on in verse 11 and says, and God said to him, I am God Almighty. Be fruitful, increase in number. A nation and a community of nations will come from you. So now God jumps back to the promise he made in the first major appearance with the Jacob ladder, which, by the way, the name change, that was God wrestling with Jacob. We talked about that last week. But a few weeks earlier, we talked about Jacob and this vision of God and the angels ascending and descending. And God said, I am going to make a promise to you. And we talked that week about how God doesn't, you know, he doesn't care about our failures because he makes all things new. And we talked about Santa and how God doesn't have a naughty list because through Jesus it's been forgiven. And so he says, remember that promise? And now this promise here, to be clear, was 20 years earlier. This was 20 years ago. In Jacob's life. And God says, I'm going to remind you of this promise. And And he tells him about this promise. He says, a nation and a community of nations will come from you. And he's reminding Jacob of what he told him 20 years ago. Now, what he told him 20 years ago was, you know, despite all the deception, despite all the issues that Jacob had, God says, I'm going to use you. And he says, I'm making a promise to you that I made to your dad, Isaac. And I made that promise to his dad, Abraham. And this promise I made to Abraham had three main components. He said, Abraham, he told him, you know, I'm going to give you a place. He said, Abraham, this land is going to be your land. This is going to be for your people. And of course, that land became the promised land. And if you know the story of Exodus, the people wanted to travel from Egypt to the promised land. Why was it called promised land? Because it was the land that God promised to Abraham and his descendants and also to Jacob. Or Israel. Because he said, this is going to be the land. He also gave him, so a place, he also promised him a people. He said to Abraham that your descendants will be like the stars in the sky and the sands on the seashore. That you, Abraham, and at the time Abraham couldn't even have kids, that you're going to have a huge nation of descendants. And that nation went from Abraham to Isaac to Jacob or Israel, and that nation became the nation of Israel. He says, a nation and a community of nations will come from you. He says, I'm going to do that. And then the third thing he says is that you're going to have a place, you're going to have a people, And then the third thing was a promise. And he says that Abraham, and this promise continued to Isaac, and this promise continued to Jacob. He says, listen, all the peoples of the earth will be blessed through you. The entire world is going to be blessed through you. There's a promise that God made that the entire world will be blessed through Abraham, through Isaac, through Jacob, as the line continues down. So he reminds Jacob of this promise and says, look, remember when I said that 20 years ago? I'm not done. It might seem like a long time to you. You might have forgotten. You might have been like, whatever. It's not that big of a deal. He says, but I'm not done. And then he says, not only will you have nation and community of nations, and kings will be among your descendants. Now, this week in your prime group, you're going to have a chance to explore that line way more. Because God promises to Jacob, you're going to, oh, I just closed my notes. God promised to Jacob that, hey, I just got a coupon for McDonald's. You can get a Wick Monald. What the heck is that? A chili McDonald's sauce and an anime and manga. I'm too old now. I don't understand what that means. So I'm going to get magma and anime and chili sauce. So, okay. Maybe it's really hot chili sauce. That's why it's magma. I know what that means. Just kidding. Anyway, so what are we talking about? We're talking about the points. McDonald's. See? Wait, I have another one? No. He says, I'm going to make a line of kings from your descendants. Up to this point, kings don't really even exist in terms of Jacob's family. Like, why would there be kings? Like, I'm just a guy with 12 sons. And he says, I'm going to make a line of kings. So he promises that there's going to be kings among his descendants. So this is another promise. And then he goes on and says, again, the land I gave to Abraham and Isaac, I also give to you. And I will give this land to your descendants after you. So that's that place. So place, people, promise. This is a big deal. Place, people, promise. Place, people, promise. You see this continue from generation to generation, and it's setting up where we're going to go this morning as well. But that God brings Jacob, appears to Jacob, and says, remember that time that you wrestled with me, and I changed your name? I'm not done. I haven't given up on that. And by the way, remember that time you had that vision with the angels going up and down from heaven, and you were all about deception up until that point? But I came to you and said, look, I'm going to use you. And I'm going to continue the promise, the covenant that I made to your dad, Isaac, and to his dad, Abraham. And that's going to be a place, a people, and a promise. You're going to have a land. You're going to have a huge nation. And all the world will be blessed through you. So it says, then God went up from him at the place where he had talked with him. And Jacob set up a stone pillar at the place where God had talked with him. And he poured out a drink offering on it. He also poured oil on it. Jacob called the place where God had talked with him Bethel. So Jacob worshipped. And it's important to understand that some of these promises, we're talking 20 years later, and I don't know some of you aren't even old enough to have experienced waiting 20 years for a promise. But sometimes we're like, God said he was going to come through, and 20 years, like, we're not that patient. Oh, God failed. God doesn't care about me. God can't do what he promised. And just understand that here Jacob has been waiting 20 years and God says, no, 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 don't forget. I want to remind you, I'm not done. So God reminded Jacob that this was unfinished. It was not expired. And that's what God reminded Jacob there. Next slide. There we go. So that's the story of Jacob so far, right? And I got so many notes here, trying not to cover all of it. So then we're going to jump into a little more backstory. So then after this, after Genesis 35, 9 through 0, of this moment where God appears to him and continues the promises, then Jacob's story concludes. Basically, Jacob's story that we read in the book of Genesis, his story wraps up. And there's a couple of things that are happening here. First of all, and I mentioned this last week as a little bit of a spoiler, but Benjamin, the 12th son of Jacob, the 12th son of Israel, was born. He hadn't been born this yet, and he was the son of Rachel. And when Rachel gives birth to Benjamin, the youngest of the 12, she dies in childbirth. So Rachel now dies, so he's lost his favorite wife, which sounds weird on so many levels, but that's the way this went. Benjamin was born, Rachel dies, and here's an interesting thing. When Rachel dies, and now Reuben, who is the oldest, whose mom was Leah, and again, we talked about this last week, Reuben was the oldest of the 12 sons. And as the oldest, he was guaranteed, does anyone remember? Two things. They both began with B. Birthright and the blessing. Right, right. And so as the oldest, he would get the birthright, which meant he got a double share of the inheritance. And so there's this weird thing that happens here, and we're not going to get into it too much, but just to say that Reuben somehow felt like it was his job to assert authority over the family. He was older now, and of course his dad was really old. And so he goes and he sleeps with Bilhah, which was Rachel's servant. Rachel is dead, but he sleeps with his servant. And kind of does it behind Jacob's back. And it was kind of a way of saying, like, okay, Rachel's dead, now I'm kind of asserting my authority. It's kind of a weird way to put it, but my authority, my masculinity on the line of Rachel. And it just kind of goes on, and as you read the passage, it's like, Reuben did this, and Jacob knew about it, and nothing happened. So just so you know that happened there. Then, as the story concludes, we also see that Isaac dies. So Jacob's dad dies. And it says that Esau and Jacob come back together to bury him, to bury their dad. So again, that reconciliation that took place, as we talked about last week, continued. So Isaac is now dead. Rachel is now dead. Reuben is kind of rebelling. And then we also read just in the last part of chapter 36, just kind of a genealogy of Esau. Because for the most part, Esau is fading out of the picture because the blessing and the promise went through Jacob, not through Esau. So that was how Jacob's story concludes. And then we're going to have like this little like parenthesis, if you will, this little interruption. I don't know, it's not an interruption, but kind of a pause in Jacob's story to tell us about Joseph's story. So Jacob's story concludes, but now Joseph's story begins. And Joseph, if you do the math, if you count down through from what we talked about in the last week, Joseph is the 11th son of Israel, of Jacob. And Joseph's full brother is Benjamin, the 12th son. So Joseph and Benjamin are brothers. And for the next, 37 to 48, so that's 37, it's 11 chapters of Genesis, the story shifts. And now we're talking about Joseph and what happens in Joseph's life and what his brothers do to him. And we talked about that a little bit last week. And I believe we also mentioned that Kirk taught about it in Heroes Return a number of years ago. But the story shifts to Joseph. And so Jacob is kind of put on the shelf for a little bit here while we continue the story. And the story covers about 40 years. So understand, from this first promise, we're going from 20 years. Now we're going on to 40 years. So we're at 60 years have passed since God first appeared to Jacob or to Israel when he had the vision of the ladder, of the stairs going to heaven. So that's what kind of happens here. And that's why as you're following along, you're like, why do we jump all this stuff? Because the story shifts over to the next generation, to what's going on in the life of Jacob. You with me? All right, now let's jump back into the point. Because God's promises are unfinished, not expired. So God reminds Jacob, we talked about that, about the promises he made him. Now Jacob reminds Judah. Jacob reminds Judah. Now Judah is one of the sons of Israel, one of the sons of Jacob. And if you remember a couple of weeks ago when we were watching the video with Craig Rochelle, his mom was Leah. Leah was the unpreferred wife, if you will. She was the wife that he didn't really want but got stuck with because he really wanted Rachel. And yet God used Leah, as you'll see in a moment, to continue this promise through the unloved wife. And so Jacob brings his family together. And so we're jumping here to Genesis 49. And if you want to go to 49, you can. It'll also be on the screen. I'm going to do some summarizing and jumping around a bit. But it says that in Genesis 49, Jacob called for his sons and said, "Gather around so I can tell you what will happen to you in days to come. Assemble and listen, sons of Jacob. Listen to your father Israel." So sons of Jacob, father Israel. Jacob and Israel are the same person. And so here's the deal. It's now at the end. Joseph's story has come and gone. Joseph went to Egypt, was sold into slavery in Egypt, ended up rising to the highest position, saved all of Israel or Jacob's family, brought them to Egypt, which is kind of important if you start in Exodus going, what in the world? How did they get to Egypt? It's because Joseph rescued them out of famine and brought them to Egypt to care for them. And so now we jump back to Jacob in Genesis 49. Jacob is dying. Jacob is old. We actually read about him in Genesis 48 as well. But he says a few things here. And the first thing, just to give you a little more background, sorry, I know there's a lot of stuff here. Joseph had two sons. Joseph's two sons were, I get them right, right? It's Levi and Manasseh, right? Yeah. No, not Simeon, Levi. Where'd they go? I wrote them right here. Ephraim and Manasseh. Yes, Ephraim and Manasseh. Anyway, sorry. Joseph had two sons. And as an honor to Joseph, when Jacob's at the end of his life here, he is now blessing his kids, kind of giving them the final words. These are my last words to you. He says, as an honor to Joseph, I'm going to adopt your two sons as my own. And so you're going to realize, if you pay attention to the story, if you know your story of the Old Testament and the tribes of Israel, nobody remembers the tribe of Joseph. Why don't we remember the tribe of Joseph, even though he was one of Israel's sons? It's because Joseph, it was as an honor to him to have his own sons. What did I say their names were? Manasseh and Ephraim? Is that right? Do you guys have the Bible there? I'm not looking at the Bible on my notes. I wrote it down and then deleted it. Anyway, he says his two sons will become counted in the blessing. And they'll be a part of this line. And so that's a big deal to understand that's why Joseph isn't part of the tribes of Israel, because his two sons are counted in the tribes of Israel, which is a greater honor than to have Joseph there himself. So that's part of it. And so in Genesis 49, Jacob is bringing each of his kids before him, as he says. Go back. And says, I want to kind of give you my final words. I'm going to share my final thoughts with you. And just a side notes here. First of all, Reuben, the oldest, the firstborn, remember, he did that thing with Jacob's wife, or Jacob's servant, anyway, and said he didn't know anything about it. Well, God actually says, or Jacob, sorry, says to Reuben, hey, by the way, remember that thing you did? I knew about that. And it's going to cost you. It's costing you your birthright. And so he has lost his privileges as the oldest one. And interestingly enough, that birthright, Jacob says, I'm going to give that to Joseph's two sons. And you can read about that in 1 Chronicles 5, 1 to 2, the very beginning of 1 Chronicles 5 talks about that. But he says, I'm giving the birthright because you slept with my servant and tried to take authority over me. I'm making Joseph's two sons, they're going to receive the birthright. So it was kind of a big deal there, and I wouldn't have shared that except we already know what birthright means now. So that's what happened there. So that was one of the things that happened. Also, Simeon and Levi, remember we talked about what they did to Dinah and for Dinah and the Shechemites with the whole circumcision and killing them all, circumcision. Jacob said to them, hey, by the way, I knew what you did then too. And because of that, you both are going to be scattered among your brothers. And this is also important. Again, if you don't know what I'm talking about, you can kind of like click off and save this till later someday. But if you look at the 12 tribes of Israel, this is part of the promise was like, you cheated me. You did this thing to your sisters, to these guys that killed this whole village. And therefore, Simeon and Levi, you're going to be scattered. And what ended up happening in Joshua chapter 19, you can read about this at the beginning of Joshua 19. But it said that when it was finally time for them to all get their land, it said that Simeon, the nation of Simeon, the tribe of Simeon, had to share land that belonged to Judah, the tribe of Judah, the bigger tribe. And so they were kind of part of that. So they didn't really get their own land. And then if you know anything about the Bible, and we did a whole series called Dwell about the tabernacle, the Levites never got their own land because they were spread out among all the lands and became the priests. They were the worship leaders for Israel. They were the ones that led the tabernacle and did all the work in the tabernacle and the temple. So all that to say, you've got 13 children, if you count the two adopted ones, but Levi never got a tribe. Joseph, his two kids were adopted in, so he's out. Levi never got land, and so then it comes out to 12 tribes of Israel. And I'm not going to recount them right now because I'm on stage and I can't remember a thing when I'm on this stage. But I can tell you later if we just have a casual conversation. I know that doesn't make a lot of sense, but just so you know, if you're like me and you're like, you're a math guy, and you're like, you know what, these numbers don't add up. This is how it worked out. This is how all those things came to be when you find out that there's 12 tribes, Levi isn't there, Joseph isn't there. There's reasons, because this is how it was all set up. So this is all part of Jacob's promise to his kids. Now, we get to the point. He gets to Judah, and he comes to Judah and says, Judah, your brothers will praise you. Your hand will be on the neck of your enemies. Your father's sons will bow down to you. He says to Judah, this is his son, You are a lion's cub, Judah. You return from the prey, my son. Like a lion, he crouches and lies down. Like a lioness, who dares to rouse him? He says, there's like a lion in you, Judah. And at some point, this lion, don't want to get too weird metaphorically, but this lion is going to rise up. And we, if you happen to notice this morning, we sang a song that said, the lion and the lamb, and it said, the lion of Judah. That's the lion of Judah that we're going to be talking about here. And when there's a song, Is He Worthy? And it's in Revelation 5, if you want to read there at some point. But the song says, who is able to open the seals, open the scrolls, and who is worthy? And it says, hey, the Lion of Judah. Because God is, through Jacob, is saying to Judah, this promise is going to continue. And you're going to be like a lion. But here's where it really gets cool. He says, the scepter will not depart from Judah. The scepter would not depart from Judah, nor the ruler's staff from between his feet. He's saying, Jacob is saying to Judah, look, there's something special about you. Your descendants are going to have a scepter. Who has a scepter? Kings. Kings have scepters. The ruler's staff. He says, your line, your descendants are going to be the rulers. Your descendants are going to be the kings. And so God makes this promise to Abraham and says, the entire world is going to be blessed to you. That promise goes to Isaac. It goes to Jacob. We talked about God reminding Jacob of this promise and said, Jacob, one of your sons, one of your line is going to be a king. And now that son, Jacob, goes to Judah and says, look, it's coming through you. And he goes on and says, he'll tether his donkey to a vine, his colt to the choicest branch. He will wash his garments in wine, his robes in the blood of grapes. His eyes will be darker than wine, his teeth whiter than milk. And I'll just say that's a quick summary for us that doesn't make any sense and it sounds kind of gross. But it's a sign of abundance. That this king, this descendant of yours, Judah, is going to rule in a time of abundance when everything is great. When everything is perfect, when everything is wonderful. Okay? So God reminds Jacob, remember these promises? I'm not done. Now, Jacob reminds Judah and says, Judah, you are going to continue this promise. Because God made a promise to me and to my dad and to his dad that all the world is going to be blessed and that there's going to be a king that's going to come through us and that there's going to be a lion that's going to come up and roar and there's going to be a time when everything is going to be perfect and wonderful. And this is 60 years after God first appears to Jacob. And guess what? 60 years later, God still didn't come through on his promise. And so if you're Jacob, or Israel, same person, you might be like, oh yeah, God doesn't keep his promises. Or I'm just going to toss that one out because it's expired. He didn't really mean it. He gave up on me. But God is not done. Because that's not how it works. Because it's unfinished. It's not expired. Okay, now we need to pause again. Because we need to do some more backstory. Backstory 3. So now we get to the saddest part of the story. Well, that's not I guess it's the saddest part. I mean, there's a lot of parts of the story that are sad. But we get to the death of Jacob. So we've been following Jacob this whole time. He brings all his kids before him. And by the way, he blessed all the other kids and gave them different promises and things about them. But Judah was the one that was really the one that mattered the most. And he says, you know, all 12 kids. And it gets to the end of the 12th kid. And in Genesis 49, verse 33, it says, when Jacob had finished giving instructions to his sons, he drew his feet up into the bed, breathed his last, and was gathered to his people. Jacob is dead. His story has ended. And we've been following it, like, I don't know if we've done any story from birth to death ever in the point. But Jacob's dead. And so it's easy to say, okay, maybe the promise is dead too. Maybe God is done. Maybe he has quit. Maybe it's over. But if you remember, Jacob's name was changed to Israel. And the story of Israel is just beginning. And so we have, as we continue here, we had the death of Jacob, but now we have the drama of Israel and the rest, basically the rest of what is the Old Testament from Exodus through Malachi continues this story. And sorry, I need to get to all my spots here. It continues this story. And this story, we actually did a series called The Story that you can look at. We also did a series called Word that talks about it. But I'm just, in case you're not sure, I'm going to summarize it in about a minute. I'm going to try to do it in a minute. Okay, so after, they're all in Egypt, And of course, the nation is in Egypt. 400 years pass, and then the nation gets bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And first, Egypt was favorable. Pharaoh was like, hey, come here, let's rescue all of Israel and his sons. Well, now the nation is so big that they feared them. And so they started oppressing them in slavery. So for 400 years, they were slaves. And finally, the people were calling out and said, God, we need to get out of here. Help us, help us, help us. And God sends Moses. And Moses says, I'm going to get you out of this land. And he brings them out through 12 plagues, 10 plagues, and it rescues them from the land of Egypt. And they go through the desert and wander, but the people disobey in the desert, and they're heading back to the promised land. But because they disobeyed, God says, you're going to wander for 40 years until that first generation has died off and the next generation is alive. And so over this time, we're talking 40 more years here, 440 since we talked about the death of Jacob. And so the nation is getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Wow, it's starting to look like stars in the sky and sands in the seashore. And so the nation is getting bigger, and they wander for 40 years. That first generation that was disobedient dies off. The next generation is up, and God says, okay, Joshua, you're the man now. Moses is dead. You're going to lead them into the land, and you're going to lead them into the promised land, the land that I promised you, that I promised to your grandfather Jacob, to your great-grandfather Isaac, and to your great-great-grandfather Abraham. It is time to go into the land. So they go into the land and conquer the land. They pass miraculously through the Jordan River, get in there and conquer. They walk around the city of Jericho. The walls come falling down. They sing the trumpets. Okay. And then they go into the land, and God says, okay, you have conquered and drive out these people, because you need to drive them out, because they're going to cause you to stumble. They're going to cause you to sin if you get caught up in their religion. So ask them to move out quietly, or we're going to have you kill them and send them away if they don't do that. And so finally they get into the land, and God says, okay, this is your land. You're going to get 12 allotments of land, except not you, Levi. You're going to be the tribe that's going to be scattered among, leading the worship for all the people here in the temple. But they're going to live in this land called the Promised Land for about 400 years. But those 400 years, the people didn't actually drive out everyone that lived there. And instead, those other people started to cause them to stumble. They started worshiping their idols. And so they got into this cycle of sin where they would worship these idols, and God would say, okay, I'm gonna discipline you because you're disobeying me. And the people would kind of go under this discipline. They would cry out to God and say, hey, help us. And God says, okay, I'm going to send a judge. And that judge is not just a person who goes gunk with a gavel, but they're a leader. And they're going to lead the people out of discipline, out from under the hand of this outside nation, and deliver you. And so people were like, yay, we're delivered now from a judge. And then they were like, oh, well, things are good now, and we're just going to go on our own. And then suddenly they would fall back into sin, and then that sin would cause God to send another nation to discipline them. And they would go, God, help us. Okay, I'm going to send you a judge. And this happened 12 times for the book of Judges. We did a series called Spiral Bound. So there were 12 judges over 400 years. And then finally we get to the last judge. His name was Samuel, and Samuel was the judge. And he was leading, and the people were like, you know, we're tired of this judge thing. We want a king like everyone else. And God says, no, I'm your king, I'm your leader, can I just be the one that leads you? And they said, no, we are a huge nation now, everybody else is a king we want. And God says, fine, you can have Saul. Saul was not a king that followed God with his whole heart, he wasn't a very good king at all. And finally God said, okay, and the people were like, oh, Saul isn't good. And God says, now I'm going to choose someone who's a man after my own heart. He chose a king named David. And the David, we did a series called After God about the life of David. And David became this king, and God stopped David and said, David, just I want you to know something. David, you are a descendant, by the way, a great, 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 great descendant of Judah. And David, I'm going to make your throne endure forever. You're the king, and someone's going to sit on your king or your throne forever. So he makes this promise to David, and David becomes the king. And then David has a son named Solomon. Solomon, wisest guy to ever live. He rules for a while, but then he's not a very good dad. His 700 wives, got some other issues there too. And so his two sons ended up, or his one son and this other guy ended up fighting and split the kingdom into two kingdoms. So that was the northern kingdom, what was called Israel, which was 10 tribes. And then there was the southern kingdom, which became the kingdom of Judah. Have you known that name, Judah? Yeah. So it's Judah because Judah was the largest thing. There were two tribes of the southern kingdom. And as we're going to see this summer, we're doing a series called King Me, looking at some of these kings. And Israel and Judah had kings, 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 kings for generations. And the Israel kings were all bad. Israel did not follow God, but the nation of Judah did follow God sometimes. And after time, God said, okay, I am done with your disobedience to the northern kingdom. And said, if you don't obey me, I'm going to cause a nation to come in and they're going to scatter you. And they're like, ha ha, no you're not. This is our land, God. You promised us. He said, okay, watch me. And so Assyria comes in and Assyria scatters them among all the other things. So the northern kingdom is gone. But the southern kingdom continues to follow God back and forth. And finally, God gives them the same warning and says, look, if you don't follow me, if you don't get it right, I'm going to take you away from your land too. And they're like, nah, no, you made a promise. He said, watch me. And so God took the nation of Babylon, comes in and pulls the people out of their land. And they go into captivity for 70 years in the land of Babylon. But God said, I promise you this land. This is your land. Well, they weren't meeting that promise. They didn't have a king right now either. And so after 70 years, God sends the people back. they get to return to the land. And Nehemiah says, I'm going to go back and I'm going to rebuild the wall. And we did a series called The Wall. And he rebuilt the wall of the city so they have somewhere to protect them in the city of Jerusalem. And Ezra led a group back as well and was part of reinvigorating the worship. And so the people were in the land. And of course, throughout this time, prophets were warning the people, don't leave God, come to God. And that's where the prophets come from. But they get back into the land and they're there. Sounds like they've, you know, worship has been fixed. And then you've got 400 years of nothing. 400 years of silence. Where the Old Testament is finished. But God, has he stopped talking? Where is God? What's going on here? And so that's the drama of Israel. And maybe that was 3 minutes. 6 minutes? Okay. If you're a math guy like me, you would know that. But that's what the whole story of the Old Testament is. But again, these people are in their land, but where's the king? Where's this blessing that God promised? Because we know the story of Abraham. We know the story of Jacob. We're called the nation of Israel or Judah because of that. And of course, the nation of Judah became known as the Jews. And that's where Jewish comes from. From the nation of Judah. And so there's this time. And of course, the point we've been talking about is that God's promises, if it hasn't come through, it's unfinished. It doesn't mean it's expired. And so for the nation of Israel and for the world waiting, saying, God made a promise, where is it? 1900 years passed. God reminds Jacob before that. God reminds Judah. 1900 years passed. And now, Matthew reminds Israel. Because Matthew is one of the four Gospels. There are four different views of the same story. And Matthew says to the Jewish people, because that was his audience, to the Israelites that he was writing to, he says, I just want to remind you of something. Because you might remember a long, long time ago, about 2,000 years ago, God made a promise to Abraham and said that you're going to have a descendant, and your nation is going to be large, and you're going to have a land, and there's going to be one that's going to come from you that is going to be a blessing to the entire world. And he says, you might remember the promise to Jacob that one of the descendants of Jacob is going to be a king. And you might remember that promise to Judah that there's going to be a king on the throne. You might remember that promise to David that a king will rule forever. So Matthew says, I know it's been a long time, but let's start out with a really exciting introduction to my story. Let me write a genealogy. Which, if you read the genealogies in the Bible, I'll get to be honest, you don't. You don't read the genealogies. You skip through them and kind of get the highlights. But this was so important. And we did a whole series on that called The Many Jacked Up Generations and Jesus' Genealogy, A Christmas Tale. But we get to this point where Matthew reminds Israel. And this is how Matthew starts his version of the story of the life of Jesus, his perspective. He says, this is the genealogy of Jesus, the Messiah, the son or descendant of David, the descendant of Abraham. He says, let me tell you, Jewish people, because you've been waiting for about 2,000 years for God to come through on his promise. We're getting there. He says, Abraham, you know the promise. You know the promise. Abraham was the father of Isaac. Isaac was the father of Jacob, the deceiver. Jacob was the father of Judah and his brothers. Now, Judah was the father of Perez and Zerah, whose mother was Tamar. And then the story goes on, and he starts tracking generation, 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 until he gets down to verse 16, and he says, by the way, this is a different Jacob. This isn't the same Jacob. He didn't live extra long. And Jacob, the father of Joseph. Joseph was the husband of Mary. And Mary was the mother of Jesus, who is called the Messiah. Matthew says, guys, listen, listen, listen. God made this promise, and we've been waiting for 2,000 years. And you think God gave up. You think God was done, but no, he is not. Let me tell you what he is about to do. Because this promise that went to Abraham and to Jacob and to Judah, here he is now. He is Jesus, the Messiah, the anointed one. The term Messiah means anointed one. It's a Hebrew term, and the term means, in terms of figuratively, it means the one we've been waiting for, the promised one. And the Greek term for Messiah is Christ, Christos. And so Jesus Christ was Jesus the Messiah, Jesus the one that everyone was waiting for. And Matthew is saying, Jewish people, he is here. God is coming through now on his promise. Because God's promises, if they haven't come true, it's because they're unfinished, not because they're expired. Because God wasn't done 2,000 years later. And so Jesus comes on the scene, and of course we know the story of Jesus. And he dies on the cross. He was going to be this king forever. And of course, the Jewish people, remember when Peter cut off the ear of the high priest? Because he was like, now we're going to have this kingdom. Because it's time to rule. We're going to knock down Rome and we're going to be in charge. But Jesus dies. He rises again 3 days later, but then ascends to heaven. And he says to his followers, guys, I want you to continue to spread the message of this kingdom. Because the kingdom is coming. Because I'm not done yet. I haven't finished, so it's not expired. I just haven't come back yet. And he says to his followers, and you right now are 2,000 years later under that same commission, that great commission, to make followers of Jesus, to make disciples, to tell people about the kingdom that is yet to come. And so here we are. We're going to look at like 4,000 years after the promise was made to Abraham, and God still hasn't come through. But it's unfinished. Not expired. Because finally, you've got God reminding Jacob, Jacob reminding Judah, Matthew, who is Jewish, reminding Israel, and now you've got John, the Apostle John, one of Jesus' followers, Jesus' disciples, is reminding us. And in Revelation 21, of something that is yet to come, John says this. And we talked about this in the End series. You can find that on the slide. He says, then I saw a new heaven and a new earth. For the first heaven and the first earth had passed away, and there was no longer any sea. I saw the holy city, the new Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride, for fully beautifully dressed for her husband. And I heard a loud voice from the throne. So wait, now if there's a throne, that means there's a king. So wait, there's someone on the throne? Wait, wasn't that a promise that God made? The voice on the throne said, look, God's dwelling place is now among his people because God has come to be among his people. He will dwell with them. They will be his people. And God himself will be with them and be their God. And what is he going to do during this perfect time? Of this time of completion, of plenty, of joy, of wonder? He will wipe every tear from their eyes. There will be no more death or mourning or crying or pain, for the old order of things has passed away. And Jacob would say, hey, you're going to have, your teeth are going to be milky white and you're going to be tying your colt to a vine. But the whole point was that things are going to be great. And then he who was seated on the throne said, I am making everything new. Then he said, write this down. This talking to John. Write this down. For these things are trustworthy and true. He said to me, Jesus said to John, it is done. I am the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. And so here we are 4,000 years later, and who knows how long, but Jesus will return. And he will set up a kingdom, and he will rule on that throne. Why? Because God hasn't finished it yet. It hasn't expired. And so when we talk about sharing the message of the kingdom, like Jesus is coming back, and if people don't know Jesus, they will spend eternity in hell. It is our job to say, no, we need to invite you. You need to believe in what Jesus did on the cross. He resurrected, and we're going to have a whole series next month talking about the breaking news, the good news, the evangelion, the gospel that we're going to spend next month talking about, because that's what this message is all about. Because he's not done. He's coming back. He's going to rule on that throne. But only for those that believe in what he did on their on the cross for their sins. Because as we'll see next week, we're all sinners. And we're all helpless. And the only way is through Jesus. So God's promises are unfinished, not expired. God reminded Jacob of that. Jacob reminded Judah. Judah, the story continues, Matthew reminds Israel. And then John reminds us. We can still count on God's promises. Because God's promises aren't finished until they're fulfilled. So the question I have for you, and for you, I don't know what camera I'm using now, for you online, make up your mind. Have you given up on God? Because maybe there's something you're like, yeah, God promised that. God was going to do that. God was going to solve that. God was going to come through. God says he loves me, but I don't feel love right now. God says he's always with me, but I feel alone right now. Have you given up on God? Because God isn't failing to keep his promises. Now, one thing that I'll just briefly touch on is that you need to make sure when you read through the Bible, you need to make sure that a promise that God has made is a promise for you. And we did a whole series called Crop 2, but specifically Crop 2, the second week, which was called, I wrote it down here because I can't remember anything, called Clarified Part 2. We talked about how Israel's promises are our principles. And so God made promises to Israel that don't apply to us, unless you happen to be Jewish, that don't apply to us today. So, for example, God told Joshua, hey, I want you to take trumpets, and I want you to line up the people and walk around a wall 7 times, and then blow those trumpets and the wall will fall down. That was a promise that God made, but it is not to us. So as much as you're frustrated about, you know, that construction barricade that's keeping you from, you have to, you know, detour all the way around it, like a trumpet is not going to bring it down after walking around it 7 times, because that's not for us. And so it's just really important. I'm not going to get into that anymore. You can listen to that for how to determine the difference. But that's one thing you're going to be talking about even in your prime groups this week, is that we can't claim a promise that isn't our promise to claim. You know, if I offer something to my son and said that's going to happen, you can't be like, oh, I heard you tell your son that, so it's going to be true for me. No, it's not. It's got to be a promise that was directed to us as the church. So the quick question is here, have you given up on God? And I just want to share 3 quick things. And these are actually totally stolen from the Foretold series that we did 3 or 4 years ago. But I taught it then, so I'm stealing for myself. I don't know if that's like weird time travel plagiarism or what. But here's 3 things that I want you to walk away with. And you're going to have a chance to discuss them in Prime this week. First thing is that if God has spoken, he will do it. So if you're giving up and you're like, God isn't going to come through, I just want you to know, if he has spoken, he will do it. There isn't an if, there isn't a maybe, he will do it. In Numbers 23, it's recorded this way, Moses records, God is not a man, so he does not lie. He is not human, so he does not change his mind. Has he ever spoken and failed to act? Has he ever promised and not carried it through? Like, we can't assume that God acts the way we do, because we make promises and break them all the time. And so we assume that's how God acts. But just to be clear, if God has spoken, he will do it. It might not be the timing yet. It might not be a promise to you. So don't be like, why can't I bring the wall down with my trumpet? Because that wasn't for you. But if God has spoken, he will do it. The second thing is, if God has spoken, he can do it. So we get into this spot where like, oh, God can't make that happen. God can't change. We talked about that last Sunday, right? God can change any heart. And so if God has promised it, if God has spoken, he can do it. And in Ephesians chapter 3, Paul says to the church in Ephesus, "How now all glory to God, who is able." Not who is, possibly. If it's not too big, he can maybe work it out. If you meet him halfway, maybe he'll, because God helps those who help themselves, which is in the book of Hesitations, chapter 4, verse 2. Hesitations isn't a book in the Bible, and that passage is not in the Bible either. Because God is able, through his mighty power at work within us, to accomplish infinitely more than we might ask or think. So before we're like, oh, God can't do that, if he said it, he can do it. He will do it because he promised. He can do it. He's got the ability. There is nothing that God can't do. I know one thing. My God is a deliverer, and if I know one thing, he will see us through. He will do it. He can do it. And finally, if God has spoken, he plans it. And this is kind of where Jacob was. And looking at this story, going, okay, why hasn't God come through? Why hasn't God come through? And we look at these coupons going, oh, it's expired. It's done now. Okay. And God, if he says he's going to do it, it's his timing. It's his plan. For the nation of Israel, they're still waiting for the king to sit on the throne for one final time. And for the king to show up the first time when Jesus showed up, that was 2,000 years for them. Peter says this. He says, "Do not forget this one thing, dear friends. With the Lord is day, a day is like 1,000 years, and 1,000 years are like a day. The Lord is not slow in keeping his promise, as some understand slowness. We just talked about this a few months ago. Instead, he is patient with you, not wanting anyone to perish, but everyone to come to repentance. The point is that God's timing is not our timing. And so if God has promised, he will do it, and he will plan the timing. And if you're going, why hasn't God shown up? Just wait, because the time is not right. But he is not done. He hasn't quit on you. He hasn't given up. He hasn't stopped. He hasn't failed. He hasn't lost his ability. Because God, if he's made the promise, he will do it. So if God has spoken, he will do it. If God has spoken, he can do it. If God has spoken, he plans it. Why? Because God's promises aren't finished until they're fulfilled. We can count on God. Jacob was reminded of God's promises. And I think it's probably amazing for him to realize, wow, look what God did through me. And Jacob, like the loser Jacob, the deceiver Jacob. And God continued his line through to the ultimate king that we now wait for to sit on the throne once and for all. Because God always keeps his promises. Let's pray. Father, thank you so much for keeping your promises. Thank you that we can trust you. And I know from our perspective, it's so hard to do that sometimes. From our perspective, we think about how we act towards others and just how we would, you know, who are we to be worthy of you making a promise? And God, I pray that even the life of Jacob, that as we considered this heel grasper, this deceiver, and how you made a promise to him, and you kept it, I pray that you would allow us to trust you in those moments. And whatever that looks like, God, wherever the people are that are watching, listening, sitting in this room, God, there are times where we feel like you've failed. We feel like your promise has expired. And help us just to reflect on the fact that that is not true, that it's our perspective. Because you will always come through. Help us to rest in that and to trust you and to wait on you. Because you will always come through for us according to your promises. And as Paul says, even beyond all that we could ask or even imagine, we are grateful to you for that, God. Thank you for Jacob. For the example that he was, whether that was a good one or a bad one. But thank you that we can glean and learn from him. And I pray that we would continue to grow closer to become more like Jesus. And God, I pray that as we go into this next series, you would give us a passion to tell people about the coming kingdom. About the one who will sit on the throne and will clear, wipe every tear from every eye. Who will heal every sickness. We love you, Jesus. Thank you for doing that for us. It's in his name we pray. Amen.